Health and Human Services Budget Division will come to order. We're going to begin today with a little update from Brian Osberg about information that he's received in the last few days from a visit he made with CMS in Washington, D.C. about the early buy-in option.
Madam Chair,
welcome.
Members of the committee, I'm Brian Osberg, the State Medicaid Director, and hopefully you have in front of you a copy of the guidance letter from CMS.
Yes, we do have that,
right?
But I think the information that you had for us is a little clearer than what is in this letter.
Madam Chair, exactly right. What I'm going to do is walk you through this and interpret this for you. And but just to give you an overview, what we have done is that we have talked to CMS a number of occasions about an early option. In fact, before they put this guidance out, we were given the opportunity to sit down with CMS to understand what the possibilities are. We actually took our current, or actually the old JMC program, and we took that program and walked through that program with them and see whether or not that would be a possible Medicaid program. And they said, no, it would not be. We were hoping that they would give us more flexibility, frankly, than they did in this guidance. The good news is that they got the guidance out to us in a quick hurry. I think it's a record time in terms of guidance after coming out of comprehensive legislation. And so we did ask them about considering whether or not we could take one of our current programs and converting it into a Medicaid program. And we also asked about whether or not we have a category for parents today. As you know, in both medical assistance and in Minnesota Care, can we simply take one of those programs and extend that to adults without kids? And the guidance says no to that as well. So what the guidance suggests, now I'm going to walk you through this, but the punchline of all this is the guidance suggests that we have to develop our own program, a specific program for adults without kids. Now, we could possibly take combination of what we currently have in the various programs and make that new program possible.
I think what we're most interested in is what we would have to do in order to get a waiver, a plan amendment approved to begin on or before June 1st.
Madam Chair,
There are things we can do if we want to wait a while and get waivers or whatever. There are maybe other things we could do, but between what CMS has told you we have to have in our plan amendment and what the department technically can implement without taking a year to change their systems.
All right. Is not an issue with CMS so much, it's an issue about what we can do technically in terms of developing a new program. Now that we have guidance from CMS that we do have to develop a specific program for adults without kids, what we would do is look at combining our old JMC program or the current income standard for JMC and our medical assistance parents program and develop a new program that way. Now, the issue is primarily because an asset test is not permitted under this new legislation and will not be permitted during this early option. So we have an asset test, of course, for parents in both Minnesota Care and in medical assistance. So we would have to develop something unique. And in order for that to happen in a quick order, you'd have to what we have to do is discontinue our current work on the new JMC program and to focus on this, to do it before June 1st. And we would have to get that direction through legislation that's enacted right away in order for us to do that. So that is what would be, because it would take us, it's possible to do it if indeed that kind of direction or decision is made in the immediate future. The other issue, though, that's before us is that we have to get CMS approval for how we would go about developing the federal financial participation aspects of this. In other words, how do we go about claiming the federal match? Unfortunately, they did not give us the same federal match we currently have for this new option, which is 61%. They said we only get 50% federal match. That means that we would have to develop unique reporting requirements, both in terms of funding, what's called funding codes and deposit codes, coding requirements in order to properly get federal match separate from our current arrangement. What we would have to do is get CMS approval. I think I talked to Chair a little bit about this, is get CMS approval for them to actually allow us to actually pay us the enhanced match during an interim period of time, and then we reconcile that later. In other words, we pay them back later. And that is something that we're going to present to CMS as to whether or not that's even possible, as to whether or not we can go ahead and not reinvent all the funding and deposit codes, they're called, for a new federal match, the 50% match, but to use our current one for our 61% match, and then seek, the ability to reconcile or pay back the difference at a later time.
Won't all the other states have this same issue?
Madam Chair, they probably will have that same issue, but we're not aware of any other state that's trying to do this by June 1st. In other words, they'll have time. If we do it January 1st, we'll have time to restructure this and do it and develop new codes for the federal match by January 1st. But we can't do it by June 1st. That would not be possible. So we're not aware that other states who are looking at this, Washington is seeking a waiver, for example, and Connecticut is seeking authority, that they're trying to do this by June 1.
And when is Connecticut trying to do it by?
Madam Chair, I don't know the exact date. We could try to find that out. We're not aware that they're trying to do it this quickly or whether or not they're trying to get
it. They might be trying to do it, though, before the FMAP expires.
Madam Chair, remember, they're only entitled to the regular FMAP. They're not entitled.
I understand that, but other states are getting an enhanced FMAP also. They might be trying to do it maybe not by June 1st, but before the FMAP expires, and they would have the same problem.
Madam Chair, we're not sure. We can find out how exactly Connecticut is approaching this. And we don't want to go through a waiver process, as what Washington is doing, and you can imagine how long that may take. We want to do a state plan amendment, which can be retroactive. That's the route we'd want to take. I just can't tell you today until I get an answer from CMS and until I get a final resolution from our operations people about all exactly what would it take for them to do it by June 1. But I've been told it would take them to office and stop now what they're working on for the new JMC program and working on other things too, that we'd have to put all our efforts into this new program. And so I'm not sure at this point. I can't give you a definitive answer as to how doable it is, but it's possible that it can be done earlier than January 1st under certain circumstances, and we have to get a response from CMS, which hopefully will be soon, because CMS is willing and wanting to work with states to think this through. So my guess is that we'll get a quick response from CMS to the question about the coding around the federal match claim, and hopefully,
what other elements are there that we would have to include in this that would add cost over what we have today or what we used to have in the GMC program or the Minnesota Care program besides the asset test?
Madam Chair, that's a good point. Let me direct you to page 3 of the guidance letter in terms of the benefits aspect of this. They're giving us flexibility in calculating income. We can use the current GAMC income calculation and not go to an adjusted gross income calculation. But for benefits, what they're saying is that, yes, we have the ability to do what's called a benchmark benefit set or an equivalent benefit set. A benchmark benefit set, for example, is a state employee benefit set or a federal employee benefit set. However, there are certain people who are exempt from that benefit set and that have to have the full Medicaid benefit set, including long-term care benefits. It's not clear whether or not our population would be included in that, because they're still developing rules around whether or not because the exempt category includes people who are medically fragile. And that's the question, is whether or not they would consider the population we're serving here as medically fragile. The exempt population does include people with disabilities, clearly. You can't have a benchmark benefit set. You have to have a long-term care benefit set for them. So we're not sure whether or not what benefit set we'll be able to have here. I was just informed by Mr. Hoffman that if we had a Medicaid benefit set, a full Medicaid benefit set, including long-term care, and not just a GAMC type like benefit set, it'd be an additional 7%.
And if we had to do that right now, would we be able to change it later when we could get our computer system to be able to handle it?
Madam Chair, it would be a question of where does CMS come down on the issue of the definition of medically fragile and the issue of who's exempt from that. That'd be one issue. We are able to phase up to 133%. We can start something lower than that. That's clear in this guidance. But they're also clear, if you look in bottom of page 3, they're saying all rules applicable under the Medicaid program in general apply to this new eligibility group, meaning the retroactive coverage, meaning no durational residency provision, meaning citizenship documentation, meaning a number of other provisions that are in our Medicaid program. So the only place they're really given any flexibility is on the income calculation at this point and on the benefit set, but not knowing exactly where that benefit set is going to end up. So we could potentially start off with a benchmark benefit set, and then if it ends up that we'll submit to CMS, of course, approval of our state plan amendment and see how they respond to it. But those are the two things that may vary from our current Medicaid.
So do we know what all of these additional things will add to the cost of doing an early buy-in over what Mr. Hoffman had originally estimated?
Madam Chair, at your request, we're working on that very thing, and I'll defer to Mr. Hoffman when he comes up as to where we're at with that. But that's what we would have to do is now take consideration all the Medicaid provisions in terms of costing this out.
Are there any questions of Mr. Osberg?
Madam Chair.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Osberg, I just want to make sure that I heard you clearly, because I heard you say we can do it, we can't do it. But do I hear you saying that you're going to make every attempt possible to try to get us into the expansion of the Medicaid program by June 1st?
Madam Chair, what we're doing is providing technical assistance to the legislature in terms of giving you what can be done and cannot be done under certain circumstances. And so we will tell you what has to happen in order for this to be done by June 1st. And specifically, we will not... our systems and operations people will make an objective assessment, as they normally do around these issues, and let you know exactly what is doable and what's possible. And of course, that's independent of the financing issue. But
Madam Chair.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Mr. Osberg, do you have to actually create a whole new program, or can you make some changes that include the requirements for this new program and use some former program as a model?
Madam,
so would that not assist in moving this along faster?
Madam Chair, Senator Prettner-Solon, yes, we have to create a new program, but we can take features of old programs, like the old over the GAMC program or the Medical Assistance Parents Program, and combine the two. That we can do.
Okay.
And that's why it's possible, and I underline the word possible, that we could do it earlier if only if things line up properly with CMS as well as the timeliness of action on this legislation.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Madam Chair and Mr. Osberg, and I know I've been harping on you about this. I don't mean to sound that way, but last when we talked about providing technical assistance last week in this committee, we had asked for a timeline that lays out the major opportunities in healthcare reform, the decision-making timeline, and also some grant opportunities that we have. And we were going to get that, you know, within a matter of days. And I think yesterday when we asked you in the health, in the policy committee, you said we could have that by the end of this week. I just want to remind you again that I'm very anxious to get that. I'm actually doing a meeting with my hospital tomorrow afternoon. I'm going to be leaving here tomorrow morning. I'd really like to be able to take that with me.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, in terms of the timing and the timeline for the early option, we know that. I thought you were referring to other opportunities within the reform legislation, not just the early option.
Madam Chair, Mr. Osberg,
Senator Olson.
I am referring to the whole thing.
Right. And Madam Chair,
I know that you have that information because mm-hmm. you're already setting up working groups and working on it, and I know it's available, and you were going to put it together for us, and I really need it.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, we will respond to that, and we'll have that for you by tomorrow. I suggest referring to the Kaiser Family Foundation timeline and the Commonwealth timeline. That's the timeline for overall. But we're doing overall legislation. What we're doing is putting now Minnesota-specific timelines
right.
and Minnesota-specific opportunities and options in the context of that guideline. So you can get a sense of what's before us by looking at those websites.
Right.
But you won't know until tomorrow what exactly what opportunities and requirements and options we have. We have a sense now what the legislature has to do in terms of compliance, and that
right.
is that's made available to you, I believe.
You know, as soon as we get what we need back from you, then we can begin working on it.
Right, right.
Other questions? Senator Laurie.
Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Osberg, on the very last page of the CMS letter, they indicate that they're going to be issuing a draft state plan amendment preprint template, which would be presumably of some understanding exactly what they're talking about, how they're encouraging states to use a state plan amendment option to get this early enrollment going, and they're saying that they're going to issue this. Do you have any idea when that might be coming, when we might expect that?
Madam Chair, Senator Laurie, no, they did, again, talk about that in our meeting this week with them, and that they're going to get this state plan amendment form out to us. So we will be... Once we have a sense of what the direction is from any new law, we'll be having that amendment submitted, you know, immediately.
Share that with us.
Other questions? Okay, then we're going to move on. There was a fiscal note issued to the House that was made public yesterday, and we wanted to have Mr. Hoffman talk about this fiscal note a little bit.
Madam Chair, I've got something to hand out to the members, which I won't need to start, but which here's the one. Here's the stuff for the members. George Hoffman, Department of Human Services. We in the previous versions that you have seen of our estimates of the effect of early expansion, we've offset the value of the healthcare access deficit against the Minnesota Care savings, which would come from moving a lot of Minnesota Care people into a medical assistance coverage. And the explanation that I gave you at that time was that this was recognizing that we had, that because of the deficit, we had unfunded obligations in the healthcare access fund, and that it made sense to recognize that we couldn't save
money that we didn't have to spend.
That we couldn't save money that we didn't have. Now, we took the reason I'm explaining this is we took a different tack in our fiscal note on a House bill which had language in it which funded the expansion out of the healthcare access fund, except and kept the intention of this legislation was to leave the same forecasted healthcare access deficit in place as was expected after the recent GAMC legislation. And so we didn't offset the healthcare access deficit against the healthcare access fund savings in that fiscal note. We did note in the narrative that this left the deficit to be dealt with, that it didn't change the forecasted healthcare access deficit, which starts in fiscal 12. After the GAMC legislation, the healthcare access fund is balanced through the end of the current biennium, has an expected balance at the end of this biennium of almost $60 million. But in the next fiscal year, it starts to be in deficit, and it accrues a larger deficit in fiscal 13. And so,
Mr. Hoffman, I notice on this fiscal note that it starts being in deficit in fiscal year 11.
Madam Chair, it at least the sheet that I just handed out.
Right.
It shows a balance. I'm treating a positive number as a balance, a negative number as a deficit. So it shows a balance of almost $60 million at the end of fiscal 11, and then an accumulated deficit of $123 million at the end of 12, and an accumulated deficit of $409 at the end of fiscal 13. So this is an approximation. Normally, we are not the keepers of the healthcare access fund balance, but it has come into the estimates we've been doing.
Yes.
And so this is our approximation of how it looks after the recent GAMC legislation. And the reason that I show you that is it's a problem of a size which is not going to go away. So supposing that the state adopted the Medicaid expansion and paid for it as the House proposes out of the healthcare access fund, we still have this $409 million problem for the next biennium. And the recent federal legislation and our own option, if we opt into the Medicaid expansion, puts severe limitations on what we can do to eligibility. So the recent federal legislation has a maintenance of effort requirement that means that because most of the children and parents in the Minnesota Care Program we get federal funding for, so from the federal point of view, they're on the Medicaid program, and the new federal legislation places a maintenance of effort in place so that we can't reduce eligibility for those people. So because of the federal legislation, we won't be able to cut eligibility for the children and parents in Minnesota care. If we put everybody under 75 of FPG into a Medicaid option, I'm inclined to suppose we won't be able to back away from that. And the only Minnesota care group, if you were going to solve this $409 million problem with an eligibility change in the Minnesota care program, it would force us to cut off all of the Minnesota care adults who have incomes over 75 of poverty. That is, if we did a Medicaid option that put all of those up to 75% of poverty on the medical assistance program, and if we chose to fund the deficit problem by cutting eligibility in the program, we would have to cut off all the other adults without kids who have higher incomes than 75 of poverty. Now, of course, forecasts will change, but I don't, you know, it could get worse as easily as it could get better.
Sure.
And we face a drastic general fund problem in the next budget. And it's not the general fund is not going to be a source of any help for the health care access fund problem. And the health care access fund isn't going to offer any help to the general fund problem either, because we're facing substantial problems in both funds.
Right. And Mr. Hoffman, do you believe that even though the legislation says that the department may not disenroll anyone from the program, that if this deficit were to persist under these circumstances, that a governor could unallot the people without children who would be left in the program out of the program because of the deficit?
I know that there is something in the federal language that allows an exception in the case of a deficit, but I don't know.
I mean our general unallotment law in our statutes.
I don't know enough to answer your question, Madam Chair.
Okay. Well, maybe we could get someone else from the department to get back to us on that. Senator Coring.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Hoffman, when just a little while ago you said we're not the keeper of the health care access fund. I guess that kind of went right over my head. I don't know what you mean by that.
Oh, I meant Minnesota management and budget are the normal keeper of the health care access fund balance.
Oh, okay.
Not the Department of Human Services. Okay.
Other questions? Mr. Hoffman, thank you very much.
Oh, the question that arose about the expansion cost?
Yes.
If you'd like me to answer that now,
to tell us that now.
I think other than the additional cost for the full MA benefit set, I didn't hear it. The only area of cost that I'm aware of yet that isn't covered by the previous estimates has to do with the benefits set. So
the previous estimate included no asset limit?
The version we gave you for Senate File 3319 had a reduction in the expansion of the uninsured because of the $3,000 asset limit in that bill. The other versions you I think have received lately for lower income limits, and we can give you one.
I haven't seen that yet, so I'll look forward to having it roll
in. Those
today.
Haven't come through yet. So what you saw before did have a somewhat lower cost because of the $3,000 asset limit. So
do you have an idea what that would add? The population 75% and below.
I can. Something in the neighborhood of $10 to $15 million a year in state costs for that.
Thank you. Are there other questions?
So other than that and the benefit set, those are the only additional cost issues I'm aware of. I've been considering the estimate of the uninsured we would pick up as covering things like the retro eligibility, and except for the version we did for 3019 covering the absence of an asset test too.
Okay, good. Other questions? Thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome, Madam Chair.
Well, when we get any further information, we'll pass it on. We have a few bills on our agenda, and we have a little bit of time left to get these bills done. Senator Sharon, first two. We'll start with Senate File 3073. Senator Sharon, do you have an amendment?
Yes, I do. We have the, is it the A3 amendment?
That is in our packets. Do you want to just explain the amendment?
This is an amendment that would require state agencies to provide ARC published information and reports. Rather than in the original language, it requires public data. And this would assist in the preparation of an annual report to ARC. I want to point out in the fiscal note, if you have that among your materials.
Yes, we do.
On page 3 of 14, under assumption or under the fiscal advisory, in order to deal with the fiscal note, it was recommended that we change language in the bill to indicate that the data to be provided is in the form of existing published information reports, and then there'd be no fiscal impact to the department. And then they gave an example of the language, and that is what is in the A3 amendment.
Right. So is there someone here from DHS that can verify that this amendment leaves the bill with no fiscal impact?
Madam Chair, members, my name is Carrie Erber, and I'm with the Department of Human Services. And yes, I can confirm that if this language is adopted, it will be a zero fiscal note.
Thank you. Senator Sharon's moved the A3 amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Senator Berglund, I also have an oral amendment to the A3 amendment. It's a simple change. It would change on line 0.17. I would add in front of the ARC of Minnesota.
So this is not to the A3 amendment. This is to the bill.
This is to the bill.
Okay. And line 17?
Line 1.7. we're adding some names of some other groups. The Minnesota State Council on Disability, the sentence would begin, the Minnesota State Council on Disability, comma, the Minnesota Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities, and the ARC of Minnesota are respectfully requested to submit an annual report by January 15th of each year.
You'll have to give it to us in writing when you're done with your presentation, Senator Sharon. Is that all right?
That'd be just fine.
Did you want to make that same change where ARC is mentioned on?
Yes.
On line 16?
Yes, on line 1.16.
And
or, 1.17 it would be, I think, right?
Well, I guess, do you want these other organizations to be included in the cooperating part on line 1.16?
16, yes.
So it's being added in two places then. Okay, any discussion of that amendment? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Would you like us to talk about what we're trying to accomplish with this legislation,
Very
Senator
briefly.
Berglund? I'll have Mr. Larson speak to the goals we're trying to achieve with this legislation.
Welcome, Mr. Larson.
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm Steve Larson. I'm the Public Policy Director for the ARC of Minnesota and the co-chair of the Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities. And very briefly, what we're trying to do is set some goals and benchmarks for services for persons with disabilities so that as a community, we can judge our performance on what we're getting for the public dollars that are being spent on these programs. We're very good at measuring how much money is being spent and how many people are being served. We're not as good at measuring whether we're getting the outcomes that we want for the programs of that we're funding. So this is an attempt to hold us accountable for measuring where we're at. Just one simple example is that the rate of employment for persons with disabilities currently in Minnesota is 20%. If we feel that we ultimately want more persons with disabilities employed, let's say in 3 years, 40%, we want to set a goal like that and then identify the barriers and challenges in getting to that within the resources that are now available to us. And so I'm open for any questions in regards to that. And we think an annual report would help us focus our efforts.
Any questions? Thank you very much, and good luck with your efforts.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions for Senator Sharon on the bill? You want to move the bill then, Senator Sharon?
I'd like to move Senate File 3073.
As amended, be recommended to pass.
Yes.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Now we can move on to Senate File 2998. We have heard this bill before, so I don't think we need to go into a full-blown discussion of it, but there's a fiscal amendment that was trying to get added in the Finance Committee that was causing quite a bit of confusion, and so I thought it might be better to do that work here. So we have the bill back in front of us again. And so I think the first thing we need to do is to have a motion that the reconsideration of the motion by which Senate File 2998 was recommended to pass.
I'd like to make the motion to reconsider.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. So now the bill's back before us.
Thank you. And we have an A3 amendment?
Yes. Do you want to just briefly explain the A3 amendment?
As you may recall, Senate File 2998 was passed out of the division and then sent to full finance. The bill provides funding to cover the administrative and actuarial costs to implement the PACE program by transferring funds from the Community Services Development Grant program for fiscal years 11 and 12. The funds used for administration are eligible for federal funds, 40%. And a verbal amendment was adopted in the division to return the federal funds to the CSSD program. In finance, there was an amendment offered, as requested by DHS, to address the technical issues of redirecting that money back to the CSDS program. So because there was some confusion and not a fiscal note, the bill was sent back to the division. So this language clarifies that, and Mr. Albrecht can explain or ask any questions you might have that how this amendment relates to what was originally passed out of the division.
So what we're trying to do here is capture the federal funding off of the administrative dollars that the department can get and reduce the grant amount that is taken for this program by that amount, because they won't need the full amount that they thought they would need from the grant once they receive the federal funding. Are there any questions about the amendment? Seeing none, those in favor of the A3 amendment say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted. Did you have a question, Senator Lynch?
Oh. Madam Chair, I'm having a hard time.
The department gets what I think it's like 90% federal funding off of their administrative activities. 40%.
40%.
So what this amendment did is to give them the amount they need, because this would be an administrative activity, out of the grant to make the state share, and then it would appropriate the federal share that they will receive to this activity, so that they don't need us to take as much away from the grant that would go to others who might be applying for it in the state.
Yes, and Senator Berglund, the money, without the language, the money would go to the general fund, and we're wanting to make certain, because we're drawing down from this grant, to have those resources go back into the grant program.
Any other questions about the bill? Senator Sharon, do you want to move the
I'd bill? Like to move Senate File 2998 as amended.
We recommend it to pass.
And recommend
Any
it
further
to pass.
Discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Thank you.
Item number 6 on our agenda is Senate File 3309. Senator Berglund.
So, Madam Chair and members of the division, this is also a bill that we had before us earlier. It dealt with chemical dependency rates, and it was my attempt to try to massage the proposal that had been made by the governor. And, of course, at the time, we got the fiscal note right when the meeting started, so I hadn't had time to look at it very closely. But it did say that the language would be harmful to our state-operated chemical dependency programs. Well, of course, nobody ever told us that the governor's proposal would be harmful to them also. We hadn't heard that in the testimony when we heard the governor's budget, but that is what the upshot is. And so so I have massaged this some more, and while we don't get quite as much savings, at least we're not going to have programs closing, I think, under the revision that I have made. So at this time, I'd like to reconsider the A2 amendment that was adopted, so that we would have that back before us, and then I have a different amendment that I'd like to offer in its place.
Senator Berglund moves reconsideration of the A2 amendment. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The Motion is adopted. Thank you. Senator Berglund.
Okay, now we'll just set the A2 amendment aside, and I believe it's an A9 amendment that I have.
The A9 amendment is being distributed. Senator Berglund.
And Madam Chair, what this does is it takes the governor's 5% cut and it applies it to the top half of the tier of providers based on their rates, and it exempts the state-operated services. So they wouldn't get a cut. And I think they're having difficulty as it is now, and we probably aren't going to be able to fix that, but at least we won't make it worse and have any of the state-operated services programs close. And I think the difference here is that state-operated services provide services to people who are committed by the courts to the state and are in need of chemical dependency treatment. Our community-based programs don't serve people that are committed by the courts. So people who are committed by the courts are more difficult level of care.
Madam Chair.
Senator Prentner-Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Berglund, we don't have that spreadsheet, or it wasn't a spreadsheet, but it was a description of the cuts to the various programs. And a lot of it was dependent upon where they were assigned. And there was an enormous cut to facility in my area, and I think
that was with the cut that I had in the previous amendment. Now it would be a 5% cut that was in the governor's budget.
And it's a 5% cut across the board?
For every facility for the that's entire above the tier. Median.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, help me understand. The A9 that I have is a delete-all. And so the A2, I guess I don't.
That's gone now.
Okay.
We
because you brought it up.
We reconsidered it, so it's no longer been adopted.
Because it would just be gone if we accepted
not
the delete all.
Not reoffering that amendment. So.
Oh, I thought you said we were doing the A9.
The A9 is
Senator
a replacement,
Berglund.
Madam Chair, and Senator Fischbach, this is a replacement for the A2 amendment that we previously had adopted.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure, Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, that I was following correctly. And
I understand it's a little messy, but I
Madam
guess
Chair?
These things happen when we get fiscal notes right at the time we're having a hearing.
So then, Madam Chair and Senator Berglund,
Senator
this, the A9 will just be the bill.
Senator Berglund.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I may explain.
Ms. White.
The A3 amendment was a hospital surcharge amendment. So I think with that A9, you just want to add that to your bill, not have it be a delete all, which I will fix if that's what you intend to do.
Yes.
Okay.
Senator Prentner-Solon.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, it appears, if I'm reading this correctly, that there's also an increase in funding to aging and adult services grants. Is that correct?
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, and Senator Prentner-Solon, no.
I don't understand
Senator
this
Prentner-Solon.
Amendment.
Existing rider, so this is the only change. It has to do with CV rates. It's not even in here.
The operating operating language is the new language that's 5%. Underlined. The 5% cut shows up on page 5 at the top of the page. Unfortunately, because this was in our bill last year, we're having to amend the appropriation section of that, of the current budget bill that's been signed by the governor. And so that's where we're doing it here. So it's this new language. It takes those that are in the top tier and applies the 5% cut that the governor made, exempting state-operated services from that cut, and just leaves the bottom tier without getting the 5% cut that the governor proposed.
Senator Berglund, is there a list that could be made available that would indicate which of those facilities fall under that 5% cut category?
We did have a list handed out in our last meeting on this. We can make it another copy available to you if you didn't save it.
I think that would be helpful for, for members.
It's quite a lengthy list because we have different categories. But as you remember, we have some providers that are only getting paid $11 or $12 a day for treatment compared to others that are getting paid, you know, $120, $306. So that's why I'm trying to work out a way that we don't cut these low providers that already really need an increase.
Senator Prettner Solon.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I am concerned about the language on page 4, though, from about 4.26 through 4.32, where it says that the provider claims must to the fund must not exceed the lesser of rates charged on January 1st, 2009, and 160% of the average rate on January 1st, 2009 for each group of vendors with similar attributes, because I think that the facility in my district was getting cut about 85 or 90%. And it was, I think, because of a poor placement for that facility. And I did talk, and I don't remember the woman's name who was here. She was very concerned about that, too. And I just don't want to disadvantage them again by such a significant cut if this affects them in a way like that.
So maybe Senate Counsel can explain this language.
Ms. White.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I was talking to Dave Gill about how to...
The language on 4.30 through 4.32.
Right now...
Ms. White.
Madam Chair and members, right now the CD rates are capped at 160%. So what this would do, then effective July 1st, would reduce certain providers by 5% that are above the state aggregate average payment, except for if those providers are state-operated services providers. But right now, the rates are capped at 160%.
So that's existing law. It's just in this language to make it clear the place at which we start making the 5% cut.
Okay. Is there somebody from the department that would like to provide some additional comment?
Madam Chair, John Zockel from DHS. The reason this may be a little confusing is that the language on lines 4.30 to 4.32 reflects the existing practice, okay? But the reason it's underlined as new language is because this was done under the unallotment authority last July. So this reflects where rates are actually at now. And we felt that as you're looking at language that changes current rates, it's important to bring the statute up to date in terms of where current rates are actually at right now.
So Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Mr. Zockel, so if we didn't want to do this, we'd have to put money into our budget to buy back that unallotment.
Senator
Zockel.
Which at least I wasn't planning to do, so.
Senator Prettner Solon.
And is it Mr. Zockel?
Zockel, thank you.
Zockel. What percentage was that cut in the unallotment? Because now we're doing a 5% cut on top of that.
Mr. Zockel.
Madam Chair, Senator Prettner Solon, the statewide equivalent value of that cut was about 4%, as I recall, but it was concentrated on those providers who were above the 160% of the average. So certain providers, which maybe is what you were referring to, certain providers may have seen some pretty significant cuts if they were significantly higher than 160%.
Okay, and
Senator Putnam-Sillin.
Mr. Zackel?
Zackel.
I know that there's been a group meeting to build a new rate structure. And is that still ongoing, and will we be getting a report from them soon?
Mr. Zackel.
Madam Chair, Senator Putnam-Sillin, yes. And that's retained in the old language on page 5.8. And going on from there, section 254B12 that's referred to on 5.9 is the legislative directive from last year's session to develop a new rate methodology. That takes effect July 2011 after DHS presents a report to the 2011 session.
Okay.
And that's the work group that's hard at work already now. And that work group is addressing issues like complexity and acuity of clients to come up with a better method of addressing some of the kinds of concerns that Senator Berglund referred to earlier.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, you also, in our packet, there's an A3. Do you need any action on that?
No, that dealt with a different issue. Only issue I'm trying to deal with today is the CD rates.
Okay. Are there additional questions from the committee? Ms. White.
And Madam Chair, just to clarify, this amendment will be amending the actual bill, delete section 1, and insert this language, just so we don't mess with that A3 amendment that mm-hmm. was already adopted.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Senator Berglund.
Well, if there are no more questions, then I would move that Senate File 3309, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Members, we need to take formal action on the A9 amendment. So Senator Berglund moves that the A9 amendment is adopted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? A9 is adopted. Senator Berglund.
Now I'll make a motion to lay it over for possible inclusion.
Senator Berglund renews her motion that Senate File 3309 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion's adopted.
Thank you very much.
The next meeting of the division will be on Tuesday, April 20th at 8:30 a.m. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.